Who sent you? What were your orders? Speak, prisoner. What if he's not gonna speak? He no longer needs his head.
Ichuta!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Chris.
And I'm Eric.
This is House Podcastica, the Book of Boba Fett edition.
And this week, we're covering the Book of Boba Fett, Season 1, Episode 2, The Tribes of Tatooine.
It's a good title.
It is a good title. Yeah, I like it.
Okay, awesome. We are going to bring back our feature that we had when we covered The Mandalorian, which is we'd have a new Star Wars question of the week every week. And this week, the question is, if you could be another Star Wars species for a week, which one would you be? And why?
And why?
Eric, did you think about it?
I did. I'm already kind of furry. So I thought I would go full fur and do the Wookiee.
Nice.
And mostly because I don't know. I mean, I've always loved Wookiees, and being able to at least people think that I could rip droids' arms off, I think would be kind of cool.
I think they're naturally strong, right?
Yeah,
big and strong. And yeah, that'd be fun for you and Lori.
Maybe.
What are you trying to say?
I'm just saying. Big old teddy bear.
Oh, there you go. Good for Wookiee hugs.
Yep.
Yeah, Wookiee nookie. No. All right.
I wish I can't make the sound, so yeah.
I can't do it. Okay. What about you, Chris?
Well, listen, I think Wookiee is the most obvious answer. It's the best one. And in fact, it's one of the only Star Wars species that I couldn't really think of a downside to. Because when you think of all the other ones, there's some just weird species in the Star Wars universe. Like imagine being a Hutt or an Ewok.
Yeah. I thought about Hutt. Like that'd be interesting.
Definitely weird.
Just for a week.
That's true. Maybe I could survive a week. But I figured Wookiee might be a common answer. So I decided to go with Gungan. Because that's what Jar Jar is. And I figured nobody takes you seriously enough to kill you. So you're pretty safe.
Plus, you can be underwater, right?
That's yeah. True, yeah. In fact, when I went and to the Wookiepedia and looked up Gungans, one of the things it says in there is that they have some of the most advanced technology in the Star Wars universe as a race.
Wow.
So underwater, all kinds of good stuff. Man. So I also considered asking if I could be a droid. It's not really a
species. Another Star Wars question.
Okay, another maybe week. Next week. So for now, Gungan.
Gungan. What about you?
Would you pick droid?
Would I pick? Well, probably not. No, probably not droid. But I think there is a question there somewhere about what droid
you
would you
have a restraining bolt? Yeah. Well, I was trying to think as like because I wanted to know would I get any special abilities with any of these species and. There's this one, like the father, the son, and the daughter force Clone Wars where they're like super all powerful keepers of the force or something. But yeah, that's just too out there for people who are, you know, just regular old Star Wars fans like most people. So I would say Ewok. Because it'd be fun to be a little cute little teddy bear and waddle around and see how people respond, you know? And then I'd like get into their stuff and start throwing it around, and they'd be like, "That's cute." Well, I'd be like, yub yub.
I asked my kids this question, and one of them said Ewok, and the other one said Baby Yoda, and I thought those are pretty predictable answers for my kids.
That's another one I thought of. Whatever species Yoda is, because apparently they're really strong in the Force, and that would be cool.
Right, would be cool to be a Force user.
But I'll stick
force
with Ewok.
Sensitive.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Let's get into this week's episode, The Book of Boba Fett, Season 1, Episode 2, The Tribes of Tatooine. What did you guys think?
Well, guys, I liked it, but I don't think I liked it as much as the first episode because it was longer. It was 50 something minutes. I guess there's a lot of credits at the end, so it was 45 or whatever. But I felt that it dragged a little bit at times. And as much as I loved the flashback stuff from last week, I think I found myself way more interested in the current time frame stuff in this episode and some of the flashbacky type stuff to when Boba Fett's with the Tusken Raiders. Although a lot of it was awesome, I felt a little bit of it dragged on a bit. So I like the episode, but I'd say not quite as much as last week.
Mm-hmm. I liked it. I can see where you can say that, you know, that it's getting kind of done. But at the same time, I feel like there was just so much stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, there were so many things. I mean, tons of callbacks, new characters showing up. Overall, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think on second watch, I liked it a lot more, digging deeper into it. On first watch, I felt like the whole Tusken Raiders story was, I mean, a lot of the Mandalorian and Boba Fett 2 are modeled after classic Western type stories. And this is the classic train robbery kind of thing. And also it's about, you know, sort of Native American / indigenous peoples. And it felt like a little bit too much of a, this is like another story that you've already seen, you know, but, I don't know. On second watch, I was just able to get more into the action of it, which is pretty freaking awesome. And also I felt like a little more of an insight into what this character is doing and why, which made me appreciate it more. So, overall, I thought it was pretty damn good.
Yeah, I agree. I liked it a little bit more on the second watch. Mm-hmm. And then, something I don't often do, if I'm going to watch it, I usually just put it on again from the beginning. This time I actually jumped around a bit and watched particular parts sort of a third time and wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something or, you know, not appreciating some deeper aspect to it. So, you know, I thought it was overall pretty good, and I did grow, it did grow on me a little as I did that. But first viewing, I felt like it felt very long to me and a bit too drawn out.
But. And I think because they're doing present day, quote unquote, present day story and then flashback story, that's what makes it longer, right? Because they're actually filling out these stories and you have two of them instead of just one.
Sure.
But yeah, I know. Yeah, it's not usually this long. Yeah.
It was, I mean, it was about one third present day, two thirds flashback.
Okay.
And you know, maybe if it was just balanced out a little bit more, and I don't imagine every episode is going to be like this either. So, it's just, they need a certain amount of story from each time frame and this is how we're getting it.
And I agree. I think they're filling out more of the backstory, and he's, I would say, in a much better position with the, Tusken Raiders than he is in his quest to become an established crime lord.
Oh, you know? Yeah,
it's got a lot more distance to go there. So I'm sure there's much more story to come.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point.
Yeah. I'm assuming that they're going to, you know, come and help him in that endeavor.
Oh, maybe,
so,
yeah.
I mean, as long as they are setting that up, that I bet you, I mean, I want to see more. I mean, I know that they did show a lot of them, but I still want to see more.
Yeah. I wonder if the Tusken Raiders could ever be sort of integrated rather than just these crazy people on the outskirts.
Honestly, I do feel like that's what they're going for, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we are getting a lot of Tusken Raider stuff, and Boba Fett becoming a member of their tribe, basically, and helping them out, and them training him, and creating the, what are they called? The Gaddafi stick?
The Gaddafi stick
that they use. Like, that's all going to, I think it's all going to come back and be important, and I think the Sand People are going to play a bigger role somehow. I mean, I sort of have a prediction of what's going to be, but I might leave that for another time for now. But I think they're going to play a big part as the season unfolds.
All right, let's get into our points. Eric, what you got?
This one isn't very deep, but it's something that kind of called to me. And it was when the assassin, the Order of the Night Ward, said, "Eat Utah." I love that. And I remember as a kid when, you know, when 3PO first overheard it and on Cloud City, I wanted to get that as my license plate. And I thought I was going to be like the only one. And I unfortunately never did. But I'm hoping that if I ever get a car worthy of a custom license plate, that it will be available.
That would be amazing. I think I wouldn't be surprised if you're not the first person to think of that. But
right.
I think that would be hilarious. So,
it's
the kind of thing that would sneak by the license plate people.
Right. Exactly. It, you know? Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. I don't know when it actually. I mean, I don't know if it's defined. I mean, we know it's an insult.
I'm pretty sure it means fuck off.
Well, yeah, I mean, that makes it even better. But
the first time we see it, yeah, they're on Cloud City mm-hmm. and going through, and C-3PO sees a silver version right. of him, the same model protocol droid. And mm-hmm. says, oh, nice to see a familiar face. How rude.
How rude.
But we saw it. I think it's been said other times in Star Wars. I know for sure in The Mandalorian, but I think maybe in the movies too. I'm not sure.
I think we've heard it. We heard it in Jabba's palace in Jedi. I think it's hard to tell, but it's right. familiar to me, right? It's one of those things that I've. Associate obviously with Star Wars, but you know it as soon as you hear it.
Yep, exactly.
There you go. Oh, that's funny.
Okay, Chris.
All right, so my first one I feel like is a little bit of a weird one, and you know, I don't know if I'm going to be able to articulate this exactly right, but when I first started watching this episode, the first third takes place, you know, in the present time with Boba Fett going to visit the mayor and interacting with the Hutts and all that kind of stuff. And as much as I really like that storyline, I kind of just like the idea that he's taken over power and he's learning to use it and figure out how it works and you know, what power he actually has over the city and everybody there. But as I was watching that, I felt like they were really throwing everything they could into these scenes. Like, they took as much familiar Star Wars stuff as they could and threw it in here, but gave a little twist to each one. So just as a few examples, like the mayor is an Ithorian. He's a hammerhead. He's the hammerhead alien. Apparently I looked it up and calling them hammerhead is derogatory. So maybe we should be careful about that.
But. I mean, I think Kenner toys said hammerhead.
Right, exactly. But, said hammerhead.
They sort of decided at some point.
Decided it's fine. All right. Then, okay. I suppose we're in the clear.
I don't know.
But I saw that and I'm like, oh yeah, there's a hammerhead. And I actually have an old Kenner action figure over on the shelf over there. But the difference was like, he's the mayor. And so he's all dressed up in these robes and we got to see him talking and with that translator, which I thought was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then there's the Hutts show up, right? There's two of them. They're siblings. They're kind of sitting on this thing all intertwined and they had tattoos. I'm like, oh, cool Hutts, but this is different. Mm-hmm. And then there's that Wookiee. Bounty hunter Wookiee warrior that walks out with the black fur and Boba Fett calls him a gladiator. And I found myself going, oh my God, that's cool. That's cool. That's cool. And it was a little overwhelming almost. And they were like throwing all this Star Wars stuff at me. Almost it distracted me a little bit. And I know that's a really weird thing to complain about, but I sat there going, all right, guys, I guess this expands the world a little bit. You're taking all this familiar stuff and you're putting a slightly new twist on it, but I was a little distracted by it for some reason. And I just kind of wanted to sit there and enjoy the story a little bit more. But I was thinking about black-furred Wookiees and what's weird about these Hutts and all that sort of stuff. So mixed feelings on that a bit. And I know it's a weird one, but it was my experience watching it. And so the second time through, it was better because I kind of could relax and I'm like, okay, all this stuff is here and now I can just enjoy it, you know?
Yeah, we should write to them and be like, could you make it like 30% less cool.
Yeah, just so a little less like Star Wars, please. You know, I mean, I totally realize this is my own problem. But
well, yeah. What you're saying reminds me of how I felt after George Lucas went back and monkeyed with the original trilogy, more in the original Star Wars, and put all these little bits and bobs flying around the screen, and it was like, well, that's too much. It's like putting like a bunch of tinsel on your Christmas tree. No, get that off of there. But but for here, but I mean, hey, we're all entitled to our own opinions, of course. For me, I don't know. I mean, the Hutts definitely make sense because the Hutts are the crime lords, you know.
Yeah,
and they're cousins of Jabba, so they'd come to try to claim his territory. They have an enforcer that happens to be a Wookiee, but that's a common species in Star Wars. So I guess what the sort of thought path I'm going down here is, did any of it seem like it would actually be there? Yeah.
Right.
And I don't necessarily think so.
Yeah. No, and I agree. I'm not, you know, I can't even say that. None of it really jumps out as this is
shoehorned in, right?
Yeah. Shoehorned in. It's just, I don't know. We all are like old timey Star Wars fans. Right. And so I think back and I'm like, I have certain ways of thinking about things. And I'm like, that's the way it is. And now suddenly it's different and that's good. Right. Like that's great. But for me, for whatever reason, I felt like there was maybe a little too much of it all at once.
I think I kind of get that, you know, cause you're thinking more about that than the story.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. You know, my co-host on the other podcast, Jason, he has recognized in me the occasional time where I get so excited about something that I just can't pay attention to it while I'm watching it.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I'm just like overwhelmed.
That's kind of why I want to see Spider-Man again. No spoilers, but I was so excited watching that. I probably missed a ton.
They've closed movie theaters where I live now because of the variant, so I can't go see it again, but I want to see it again too. Anyways, that was my first one, just that it was all overwhelming, and I think I need to relax.
I mean, when those Hutts came around the corner, I was stoked. I was like, oh, yeah, my me God, too. It was so cool. And then when the Wookiee came out,
Oh my gosh,
that is awesome. That's how I felt. Like,
yeah.
That was one of my other points. I mean, it was such an awesome moment. I think at first I was thinking that we were going to see like an Indiana Jones moment where he just blasts them, you know, without any, you know, any hesitation. But the more he sat there and stared them down, I can't wait for that showdown.
The Wookiee's body language was great, too.
Yeah.
He's like, very cool. I'm a fucking badass.
I did a little bit of research and I know a little bit more about him because I obviously didn't know anything. He's from the comics and he has quite a history.
Yeah, he's a bounty hunter.
Yep.
And he's actually worked with Boba Fett.
Yep.
Yeah, so they know each other. I recognize that, at least that, it's not new, really, to Star Wars. It's just new to me, here.
Yeah.
I think the Hutts and the mayor and stuff, that's probably not really new, technically, either, but...
But Boba Fett knew him, you know, especially from what he said. You know, he said, you know, that he was he knew he was a gladiator, and... Mm-hmm. And that he wasn't a sleeping Trandoshan, so I'm thinking maybe one of his last matches, he had to go up against one of them and maybe easily took him out or something. But the scars on his head, I don't know if you guys read about him, but he had a showdown with Kenobi, and that's from a lightsaber. So I'm thinking that might be... might show up in his story.
Not a lot of people survive a lightsaber to the head, that's for sure.
Exactly.
I think I did. Yeah, I read some of those Darth Vader comics, and they're pretty damn good if anybody gets a chance to read them. I mean, he was hired at this, like when Vader hired Boba Fett to go look for Luke Skywalker, that was at the same time he hired this guy.
Yeah, he brought both of them in.
Black Kersantan.
Santi for short. Nickname is Santi.
Santi. All right.
Santi.
Santa Claus.
He started as a gladiator, then he was kidnapped from
Kashyyyk,
the Wookiee home planet, and forced into being a gladiator, but then got out of that and became a bounty hunter.
But yeah, he's had showdowns with Han, with, he tried to, you know, he tried to take out Luke, obviously fought Ben Kenobi and didn't fare so well, but I can't wait to see those two guys throw, you know, Boba Fett.
Yeah. There's definitely got to be a show, a fight or a showdown, right? Yeah. You can't drop a Wookiee in like that and then have him disappear.
Right. Exactly.
It's cool too, because we haven't seen a lot of Wookiee stuff. There were a lot of Wookiees in, I guess it was Revenge of the Sith when they showed big battles on Kashyyyk, but they're always good guys. So it's interesting to see that Wookiees are just like us. One. There's different personality types. I don't know if you'd consider him a bad guy, but at least a mercenary.
Right.
And then, you know, Boba Fett, I mean, had the braids on his armor.
Right.
So he's definitely taken some out.
Okay. So my first one is just, I think I got a little more of a idea of why Boba Fett wants to be a crime lord. I think he has two goals that the stuff in this episode supports. One is actually to create harmony among all these potentially warring factions or tribes of Tatooine through mutual respect and figuring out how they can work harmoniously together, but also to avoid the path of his father of being a bounty hunter, because that was a treacherous path that killed his father. And so to go his own way. And his own way is to sort of try to create some order here that will help people live together in a way that is mutually beneficial. This vision quest that he got sent on, where the lizard went up his nose. I always love like drug trip scenes.
Yeah.
And the Dune Sea becomes the Kaminoan Sea, where he's from. And he sees a big tree and a small tree. And I think that's him and his father.
Oh, okay.
And it could also be like a family tree kind of a thing. And the tree, he sees his father flying off at some point, which is sort of like showing a disconnection. Then the tree starts to smother him. And then that's superimposed with the Sarlacc pit also smothering him. So to me, that's like, and then we see him at the Battle of Geonosis holding his father's helmet, showing his father's path is death. And the tree smothering him is like, his legacy is led him to the Sarlacc pit. If he follows in his father's path, it will lead to death. And he sees his own reflection.
His own reflection, yeah, in the helmet.
Maybe that's his father's face because his father looks the same, but in the helmet. That's just like when we saw Luke go into the cave on Dagobah during his training with Yoda and saw Vader cut off his head and then his mask blitzed away or whatever, and you see Luke Skywalker's face inside there. So same thing there, you know, if you know, don't go the way of your father. and
then seems to be a running theme.
Yeah, it's a classic Star Wars theme.
It is, yeah. Star Wars characters go into a place and basically face their worst fear, and how they come out and how they react to it is important, right?
It can be a turning point, and that's what we were saying. His experience in the Sarlacc pit was like being reborn, and choosing his new self there. But also, what I meant by the classic Star Wars storytelling is just a man trying to differentiate himself from his father and trying to be better. You know, that's what Luke was doing. And in his black garb at the end of this, Boba Fett kind of reminded me of Luke in Return of the Jedi, you know, after he had started on this new path and became a Jedi. And also here, Boba Fett is forging his own gaffy stick. And Luke made his own lightsaber. So I don't know.
The whole, all that whole ceremony purpose, but it's was definitely similar to the Jedi.
Yeah, Luke's path a little bit. So the whole thing about harmony, like his path is, harmony through mutual respect. So with the Tusken Raiders, his standing is clearly now elevated. He gets to train while these other peons are still digging for those water gourds or whatever they are. And then we see these drug runners come through in their train and just kill the Tuskens like they're pests. And
I mean, the poor Bantha. They're like, they both times he comes, the Bantha's first one to get it. I'm like, move those things away.
And I just think, you know, it would make in some, you could see how that would make sense to just shoot at the Tuskens, because the Tuskens, we've seen them attack others unprovoked. Like when they shot at Anakin and the other pod racers during the pod race in Phantom Menace. Yeah. And they've always been presented as just attacking people unprovoked. But Boba Fett sees that, no, there's a potential for a harmonious relationship here. And so when he disables the train and tells the leader, these people lay ancestral claim to the Dune Sea, and if you are to pass, a toll is to be paid for them. Any death dealt from the passing freighters will be returned tenfold. That's saying, you still can come through here and do your business, but you have to pay these guys. And if you mess with them, then you're going to get it. So he's not saying never come back here. He's just trying to impose some order, you know, and mutual, mm-hmm. like where things can be mutually beneficial. In the present day, they keep referring to Boba Fett as the new daimyo. We didn't talk about that last time, I don't think, but it's Japanese term daimyo. They were powerful Japanese feudal lords who ruled Japan from the 10th century to the middle of the 19th. So I think that shows, like, feudal lords, there's not one central authority. There's just clans everywhere. And it shows how there's lawlessness here, but maybe Boba Fett wants to impose some kind of order. Yeah. And he says to the mayor, you should remember you serve as long as the daimyo of Tatooine deems it so. So he's just trying to assert his authority. And he said to the mayor also, I'm not a bounty hunter. Cause that just reinforces to me he's trying to distance himself from his father's past. That's what I got.
I mean, I love all that, Jason, actually. And just listening to you talk about it and thematically like that and what the show is presenting actually makes me like it a little more already than I did.
Because I wasn't getting any of that the first time I watched it.
Right. I mean, it does take a little, you know, it takes a little reflection on it, yeah. I think, to come to all of that, which is great. I mean, that's what you want, a complex show. But it's, you know, when you first started talking and you said, so what does he want as a, you know, what does he want to gain from this position he's in now? I'm like, well, he wants money and power. What do all crime lords want? Money and power. But it's clearly so much more.
That's a little more. Yeah, yeah, for sure.
And I mean, I think it's the really Disney-fied version of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they threw
family kind of in there too. So,
because like I was saying last week, if there is no law here because they just haven't made it out this far in the galaxy or whatever, then you need something or else it will just be anarchy and chaos. And that's what the crime lords do. And how fair they are or not is a question, an open question, but I feel like he wants to be really fair.
For sure. And Eric, you started mentioning that the family thing too, where the mayor says, you know, it's harder to run a family than whatever.
Like exactly.
But he says, go speak to, what's her name in the
Garza.
In the bar? Yeah,
Garza. Mm.
And he does that, and that scene ends pretty quickly because the Hutts show up, right? But I am very curious, even more than I was already last week, to see what her role in all of this is.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah.
Seems like the mayor's didn't the mayor tell him, or somehow he decided that she's the one who sent the assassins after him, right?
Yeah, that even that's a little unclear, though, right?
Yeah,
the
I wasn't.
One guy says
I didn't.
It's the assassin says it's the mayor.
Yeah.
The mayor says it's her. She says it's the Hutts, and
She's definitely going to play a bigger part. Obviously, I mean,
yes,
he pointed her, he pointed him in her direction, and he went there, and
she seemed surprised.
We didn't learn much, but obviously there must be something going on.
I don't trust anybody.
Interrupted by the job by the Hutts.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, I thought, okay, it was totally too good to be true that she was so nice last week, but we just don't know at this point.
But she was sweating.
Yeah, right.
But it might have just been because of the Hutts. Look at that scene. She's not sweating at all. I think she's going to be a big part, and I think she's going to be one of those characters that is surface level, so nice and friendly, but has all kinds of stuff going on beneath the surface, you know, and we're going to find out. I think that's one of the things I'm actually most interested to learn more about right now.
Yeah. I mean, isn't it like the bartender that knows all the secrets, that knows all the dirty dealings that happens at her bar.
Everybody confides in bartenders because they think it's safe.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Where are we? Chris, I think. No, Eric.
So for our second one, I mean, my second one was the Santee, mm-hmm. and that was just awesome seeing that Black Wookiee coming out and looking badass. But if we want to go to my third, sure. I loved the train fight. I mean, it was cool and fun and exciting, and again, you got to see a little bit more of Boba fighting with his stick and doing his facial expressions. But even more so, I thought that there were a couple moments where you could see that he was really concerned about his fellow Tuskens. The scene where he has to hook the speeder in reverse to get the guy, and he gets his speeder shot because he was focusing on his fellow Tusken. But that whole scene was just awesome. And yeah, just great.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I'll throw that in now too, as well, because the train heist was a thing I wanted to talk about. I think it was a great action scene. Train heists, whether they're done in the Old West or in Star Wars or wherever, are always kind of the same, but they're always really exciting, right? People yeah. either they ride up on horses or they ride up on speeder bikes. They get on top of the train, they run along the top of the train, they fight, they somehow get inside. And
usually there's like an overhang or something. Here it's like a jet that they have to duck or get out of the way.
Right.
That's right. They got to do something before it gets to the tunnel or whatever, and stuff like that. But it's always fun and it's exciting. And I thought this one was really good too. And one of the things I noticed is just how amazing everything looked. I thought all the effects were awesome, and everything looks like it's heavy and has weight. And you remember when George Lucas added all that crap to the original trilogy, none of it looked real. It looked like it was
in the prequels,
digital effects floating in nowhere, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Here on this show, I think everything looks like gritty and amazing and solid and like it has weight. So I thought it was amazing. Really, really exciting scene. I did think the droid train engineer that was driving the thing was a little bit silly, but I didn't really mind it. And I did kind of laugh when he jumped out the window and just abandoned his
That's
job.
What I liked. And then he crawls off.
He's just like, screw you guys. Well, I'm out of here.
I'm like, that's probably his whole job. He's designed to drive a train, and then he jumps out and like, now where's he going to go? What's he going to do?
Yeah.
You know? But train
I hope
heist,
he shows up again.
Amazing.
That'd be funny.
That would be funny.
I bet you he'll come back.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, I like the train sequence. I mean, I kind of felt the same, Chris, like, oh, I've seen this so many times before, but man, this is a really cool version of it.
I mean, they did a train heist in the Solo movie too, right? Remember?
Yeah.
And that was fun as well.
Avengers too.
Right. Yeah. So, I don't know. A good train heist, I'm all for.
Okay, I'm going to talk a little bit, just a little, about Native American parallels, because in Star Wars, I kind of touched on this earlier, but the Tusken Raiders, called the Sand People, were presented as scary bad guys, attacked Luke, Ben saved him by mimicking the sound of the Krayt Dragon, which you finally got to see in The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
In Phantom Menace, they shot at Anakin and all the pod racers. In Attack of the Clones, they kidnapped and tortured Anakin's mother, which you might argue was the thing that actually pushed him full on over to the dark side and started that obsession with trying to prevent Padme from ever dying, which backfired big time. But now, many years later in The Mandalorian, they're presented as more nuanced and Mando respects them and everything. And here in this episode, they're fully looked at, I think, through the indigenous people's filter. It's like a metaphor for the American West, where Europeans came through and killed natives and took their land, or any indigenous peoples that are displaced, or forced to be nomadic or whatever. I mean, here in the U.S., with the expansion of the rail system, it was easier for Westerners to settle all around the U.S. and displace natives. And here it's a train. So I feel like that's, pretty big parallel. And then the leader of this spice selling gang says, "We thought you were uncivilized raiders." That's just like how people see natives sometimes, as savages. And my wife, she is a doctor, and she had a rotation in a Native American area, and she knows a little bit about Native Americans, and she was just telling me that when the Sioux got horses, the Sioux tribe, they became a very powerful tribe. So I feel like the speeder bikes are kind of like,
are like their horses.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. But they're also like motorcycles, which I thought was really cool how they're all lined up like motorcycles outside a biker bar. I love speeder bikes, so it's kind of fun to see.
They are fun
treated like that. And then there was also that whole vision quest. That's like a Native American ritual. They use peyote and
peyote
get visions. And the whole dancing ceremony at the end is like a powwow, you know. And Tamara Morrison is Maori, which is another, you know, that's New Zealand tribal or indigenous culture. And they have like ceremonial chanting and singing and stuff like that, too. One thing I felt like a little funny about is, even though Tamara Morrison isn't a white guy, it feels a bit like a white savior kind of a thing, you know, like Dances with Wolves.
Yeah. He just comes in and fixes all their problems them that they couldn't fix for themselves.
On their own, yeah.
Gives them some speeder bikes and teaches them how to ride. And the next thing you know, they're,
well, it's not an invalid feeling, I don't think, because they're building out this Tuscan society or culture so much, and they've presented them to us like they are a sufficient, you know, and maybe not technologically advanced culture, but they can certainly handle their own. But you're right, Boba Fett comes in and immediately he's kind of like pulled them, I guess, up a notch or standing up for themselves or whatever. So,
The chief said they've had to hide, and he's like, you shouldn't hide your warriors. Yeah.
That's right. We don't have machines. And then right at the end, Boba Fett's, well, now you do. Good.
Now
good
you
for
do.
You, you know? Yeah. I can see what you're saying there a little bit, but there's all kinds of parallels, to Native Americans and the trials and tribulations they've been through.
Right.
At the hands of others generally.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and the way that they were presented in the old Star Wars movies versus now kind of maybe mirrors how Native Americans used to be presented in American movies as the scary bad guys. And now people hopefully have more sensitivity about indigenous cultures and stuff like that.
Yeah, but it explains, you know, explains why they were shooting at everybody, because, you know, all these outsiders were coming in and they wanted them gone.
Right, just killing them with no provocation, right? Mm-hmm. So who knows who started that first, but the idea isn't to figure out who's to blame as much as, at least for Boba Fett, as just trying to fix it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Good approach to many problems.
Yeah. In life. Okay. Where are we?
Well, Eric, do you have another one?
Right?
Yes.
Do you have another one from your notes or something?
I mean, I have stuff that I can talk about. Yeah. The whole Tashi station, we got to see that, and I thought that was incredible. And that
I need to go to the Tashi station to pick up the power converters.
You know, that was isn't that a drinking moment in the there's some Star Wars drinking game that anytime Luke whines, you got to take a take a drink, and that's definitely one of them.
I
don't know if
I think that's the one. Yeah,
people watching realize what you're talking about, so explain it in more detail.
I don't think I've ever done it, but there's a drinking game.
No, I'm not talking about that. No, I'm just saying. You say Tosh Station. I don't even know if people realize what that means or.
Okay, gotcha. Well, yeah. So in the original Star Wars, Luke says. Uncle Ben tells him that he has to take the droids in to get them serviced. And he says, well, I was going to go to Tashi Station to pick up some power converters. And, you know, we hear about that. There were actually some deleted scenes where he actually does go to Tashi Station and he meets some of the characters that are actually still there. And I thought that was super cool.
Was Biggs there in the deleted scene?
Yes.
Yeah. Biggs, who we see later on, I think at the end of that movie, right? He's the one who goes off and joins the rebellion and makes Luke jealous. Right. But the two other characters are who?
Is Cammy and Fixer. Or,
two friends of his.
Two friends, Lays, I think is his name. But they meet, or I mean, they have some dialogue in the deleted scene. They also have a big extended scene in the Star Wars radio drama. Hmm. I don't know if you remember this, Jason, but you and I were driving to your college, and it was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and we turned on the radio, and it was on, and we listened to it the whole way.
I don't even remember that.
Oh, that
it was
fun.
Super cool. Yeah, we were just flipping channels, and we were like, "What the hell is this?" And it was just this awesome thing. But there's a big scene in the radio drama where they, I think, where they actually race skyhoppers.
Okay.
But there's definitely a moment where he, Luke, and Cammy and Fixer, and I think there was another character, but they didn't show up in this. Windy. That all have parts.
Yeah, so this couple that's sitting there just trying to have a good time.
Have a drink.
And the biker gang comes over and takes their drink and their chips or whatever. And Fixer says, that's not right. That's them. That's Luke's friends.
Yeah. Yep. And at first I wasn't sure, but I turned on subtitles and it said Cammy. Mm-hmm. So they are there.
Listen, Tosche Station was sort of mine too. I wanted to bring it up because I thought it was super cool to see it, but I must admit, I didn't know that's what it was without going to look it up after. I didn't realize upon watching it that this was supposed to be Tosche Station. I didn't know that those were Luke's old friends. And, you know, reading up a little bit about the episode, they mentioned that. And so I'm not sure. It's clear in there that that's what it is, unless you're like maybe the biggest invested Star Wars fan. But it was really, really fun to see, and I enjoyed the scene a lot. The one thing that I did think of, though, is I found it kind of weird that Boba Fett goes there to, I guess, steal the speeder bikes, and he walks in and he kicks a lot of ass. Like, he is very competent taking out those guys. But it immediately followed that training scene with the Tuskens where he seemed kind of incompetent, right? And that Tusken like knocked him down and he didn't seem that great. So
that's a good point.
I thought it was a weird sort of juxtaposition of him being kind of crappy to being super badass in there.
It's also pretty convenient that was he just going to go steal a bunch of people's bikes? And it turns out that they're being dicks, so it seems like it's okay. But what if they weren't dicks? What if they're really nice? What if they offered to buy him a drink, but he still have stolen their bikes?
You know, I know lots of people that own motorcycles that are perfectly nice people.
I used to have one.
Oh, cool. See, you're right. It's just lucky that those were bad guys and you could beat them up and steal their stuff.
But I think it's personally super cool because I didn't know that was Cammy and Fixer and Tosche Station until I went and did some research. But I think it's cool that they'll put that in there and not like, hey, guess what? Look over here. It's Luke's old friend. They just put it in there for anybody.
Decides
to dig deep,
But see, this is the kind of thing that didn't distract me because I didn't even know what I was looking at.
Right.
And now I'm really excited that it's there.
Yeah. Like if they would have had, I don't know, Lando Calrissian over in the corner, that'd be kind of weird.
That would be weird. But also, look, there's Lando just sitting in the corner. Like if he didn't say anything, can you imagine? Right. That'd be awesome.
And the fight breaks out and he just goes to the bathroom.
Right.
What did I miss?
Anything else you wanted to say about any of that, Eric?
No, that's I don't good. Think Eric so.
Yes. Okay. No, I'm good. Yeah.
I hope they do more stuff like that, though. You know?
Yeah, it's great. Just capitalize on the opportunity to do stuff like that. Why not?
Right.
Okay. My last one is just some more of the lore and callbacks. This is a totally in your face one, but we see the exterior of Jabba's palace and then that big vertical like garage door gate thing opening that's just like in
the teeth.
Return of the Jedi with R2-D2 and C-3PO.
I mean, it's the same door, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it's just, I guess it would be the same. I don't know. I just think it's cool, but yeah.
It's very cool.
The assassins that was captured by Fennec Shand is part of the Order of the Night Wind which I think that was his first appearance in Star Wars, but sounds like a fart to me, the Nightwind. and I love that Fennec Shand is like, oh yeah, they're overpriced. It's all about the name. It sounds like a plumber talking about other plumbers or something, you know.
We got to see the trap door though. That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Fell down the trap door where Luke fell down in Return of the Jedi, and Boba Fett's platform moves up to the edge so he can see down in there, just like it did with Jabba.
I was also curious. I mean, referencing Clone Wars, not Clone Wars, The Bad Batch, where they got hired to find Mochi. So, do they still have a Rancor? Because I don't know if you remember that, but Bad Batch went with Omega, and Bib Fortuna had that young female Rancor named Mochi. So I'm assuming that he still has them. So
yeah, because same Rancor that Luke killed, right?
Right. Yeah. Mochi's different.
And also, Fennec Shand said something about
the menagerie.
So that's why I thought, well, there's probably going to be something down there, but there's nothing down there. So I don't know.
It's a pretty good fake out, though, when you need to scare somebody. Yeah.
Mochi, that Eric just mentioned, by the way, is another Rancor that in the Bad Batch.
Yeah, sorry.
What happened? Like, they sold it to Jabba or something?
Yeah, they got hired. And
that was before all of this, like, Bad Batch takes place right at the beginning of the Empire. So anyway, we would think that there would be more Rancor in Jabba's palace or something, but maybe that one got killed too. Who knows?
Yeah.
Speaking of Jabba the Hutt, if you're a casual Star Wars fan, you might just know of him and no other Hutts, but there's a whole species of Hutts, and there's a council of Hutts that controls a huge criminal empire in the underworld of Star Wars. And Fennec Shand says, you know, to Boba Fett, you're going to need permission to kill these Hutt twins. I think that's just kind of like they're a mafia family, right? If you're in the crime world, you need permission to kill a mob boss.
I mean, I was wondering about that too, because it made me think of, like, you need a hunting license to kill deer in the woods, right? Do you need a license to kill Hutts? Are they special? Are they protected species for some reason? But
I think it's more
usually like protected mafia within, though. So I was curious of who would you get permission from?
Yeah.
I mean, in the mafia, it's like if you're a made man, you know, you have to get permission from the godfather or something, right?
Right.
But if you're an outsider, I mean, just free game?
It could be, yeah. Maybe that's something that doesn't quite make sense, or maybe there's a whole crime organization that includes different species.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
From what we've seen, though, it does seem like the Hutts are their own thing, and these Pike, which is the name of the alien species that runs the spice trains, are a different faction, and they're the preeminent spice delivery people syndicate.
Yeah.
Spice, by the way, is the Star Wars drug, if you didn't know.
Yes, right.
It is from the slave mines of Kessel or something, right?
Yep. The Kessel Run and all that.
With the Hutts also operate in something called Hutt space. Now, is that just a reference to sort of their organization, or is that a physical area that they oversee or rule over? Do we know? I mean, I'm sure somebody knows, but do you guys know?
I would think that it would just be within their organization, but I don't know.
Maybe it's a pizza parlor. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I'm going to go to Hutt Space and pick up a couple pizzas.
I don't know.
There is Pizza the Hutt.
But one of my favorite, because in the Clone Wars, there's more Hutts. In fact, the very first Clone Wars movie was about a little baby Hutt. But Jabba's brother, Zero the Hutt, is purple with day glow tattoos and like a little feather thing sticking out, and he looks like a big Hutt raver.
Hutt raver.
I liked him. Let's see. Fett said to Garza, "Now you're sweating like a Goompa on Mustafar." People should know Mustafar. That's the lava planet where Anakin fought Obi-Wan and lost his arms and legs, right?
Yeah.
One arm.
One arm. Two legs. and then kind of became Vader, and then he went back and as Darth Vader built his castle there, which is super cool. If you have an Oculus Quest, play Vader Immortal, and you'll get to hang out in Vader's castle. But sounds Goomta, fun. I think, is new. I don't think we've heard of. You're sweating like a Goomta. I don't think we know what that is. I read this online, but the pulsing, whirring sound effect of Boba Fett in the back to tank kind of is the same exact sound as when Han Solo is taking out of carbonite, which doesn't really make sense, but whatever. There's some part
using sound effects, whatever.
Right.
Use. Fett is communicating with the Tuskens using some kind of sign language. The Mandalorian did that in Mandalorian 2.
I thought that was cool.
I had this whole biker bar thing, Tashi Station. The species of the bikers is called the Nikto. They've been around for a while. Yeah, those Pike, the Pike Syndicate is a crime syndicate, but it's also their race, the galaxy's top suppliers of spice. We saw them in Solo, the Han Solo movie,
yeah.
And in Clone Wars, where they had a part in Mandalorian history, Rivals of the Hutts. And I think maybe they wouldn't be there if Jabba was still in charge, since the Pike and the Hutts are against each other. So this is just another indication of how chaotic it's become with Jabba not there. You know,
other crime factions trying to
they're moving in on the territory. Yeah,
yep.
And last, the Tusken chief mentions before the oceans dried, or after the oceans dried, we've hidden to protect ourselves. And so I looked that up, like oceans on the desert planet. I guess in decanonized Star Wars continuity, Tatooine was once a water planet. It was bombarded by this enemy that had tried to enslave Tatooine's people and failed. And so it just like destroyed their ecosystem. So maybe this is just another indication, because they've tended to like bring stuff back from the decanonized stuff. So maybe they did that here, you know?
Wow. I never would have thought that there was some sort of ocean
right.
on Tatooine, because looking at it now, it looks like it's been pretty dry for a long time.
Yeah, back when things used to be. I mean, the Earth is heading that way.
Right.
Yeah, fair enough.
So that's all I have for callbacks. Any other notes?
I have some notes for sure. Jason, earlier, I think you mentioned just the shot of them approaching Jabba's palace, or what is now Boba Fett's home base. And, you know, that was the opening shot of the episode, I think. And it just reminded me how much I love the wide establishing shots that we've been getting on the show so far.
Yeah, very Star Wars.
Very Star Wars, but they did it again, too, with the city, Mos Espa, from a different angle. And I just think that all looks amazing. So I'll stop calling it out, but I hope they keep doing it. I thought it was fun when they arrive at Garda Fwip's bar and she calls him Mr. Fett.
Mr. Fett.
Instead of Boba Fett or Lord Fett or, you know, whatever. I thought Mr. Fett was funny. And I also realized that he's been there twice now and he hasn't really made it in past the front door hardly. So we'll see. We'll see if he ends up there for an actual drink someday. When the Hutts came along... this is a weird little detail, but it looked to me like the big platform they were being carried on was kind of sagging in the middle.
All warped.
Like it was about to break or something. Right. And
if you look at the guys that were carrying them, they were like physically struggling.
Yeah. And you know,
they would have to be
like, we've seen so many things using what looks like super widely available anti-grav technology,
like hover floating along.
Yes,
but I think the Hutts, they deliberately don't want to use that just to show that, look, we can get all these people to carry our fat asses around.
Right, we can make these jumps just lift us up over everywhere. It's funny. Now, while they are talking with Boba Fett, the Hutt twins, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but I think he claims that he killed Jabba. I believe he says, I killed Jabba, which isn't true.
He said he killed Jabba's cowardly assistant or whatever.
Bib Fortuna.
Bib Fortuna.
Oh, maybe
I think that's what he said. Yeah.
He was talking about Bib Fortuna at the moment. Yeah. Okay. All right. So strike that one. I thought he said I killed Jabba, which I thought was interesting because he was lying about that, but maybe I was wrong.
Let's go back and check.
Yeah. Maybe I'll double check that later. When he towed the speeder bikes back to the Tusken camp. He just sort of tied ropes around them. And I thought, that doesn't seem like it would work. As soon as he slowed down, the ones behind him would just
continue to
flying
move.
Forward. But they seem to break just fine. So I guess that comes with the ubiquitous hover technology that they have, maybe. another silly technology one that I thought about during the train heist is propulsion systems in the Star Wars universe. I'm pretty sure I've seen people basically like standing right behind starships like the Millennium Falcon and other ones as they're taking off out of a hangar bay or something like that, and they're totally fine. And then on the train, you get too close to that big engine away. And they get blown away like 100 feet, you know, the other direction. So maybe it's a different kind of thing, but I don't know. I wonder about this stuff.
Yep. Eric,
you got any notes?
Yeah, a couple. I mean, little things like when he was first coming in to, you know, visit the mayor and all the people, you know, including quite a few Trandoshans were all looking at him. And I just got the feeling that they all thought that he was already dead. You know, that the assassins had, they yeah. all knew that,
oh, yeah.
that the assassins had been, you know, dispatched, and that him showing up again was pretty shocking. I thought that was kind of fun.
It looked like that. But then when she said, "Have you heard the Hutts are here?" Then I thought, oh, wait, were they just upset because they knew the Hutts were coming? So I'm not positive.
Well, either yeah. way, I thought it was interesting that they seemed a little shocked that he was
still
strolling alive. In.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, maybe they knew that the Hutts were coming and mm-hmm. that there might be a showdown or something. I thought that was kind of interesting. And then also speaking about the train, it definitely another, I think, little callback was that the whole propulsion system looked like the pod racers, you know, it looked like it was maybe taken from a pod, you know, or something
yeah,
attached to the top. But that whole, you know, the whole screen with the power and how he was moving the power around looked mm-hmm. very similar to when Anakin was shifting power when his little piece fell off of his pod.
Yeah, you're totally right. It's like a blown up version of that, you know, an expanded version. Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. It's cool.
I think that's all I got.
Okay. I just have a few. I really dig that the Gamorrean guards are part of Boba Fett's entourage. It's really fun.
Yeah.
Because I always kind of like those guys. The Hutts, the Hutt twins are new to Star Wars lore, as far as I know, but they're called cousins. At first, I kind of wondered if they were conjoined, but I don't think so.
Well, they're Jabba's cousins, but they're siblings, the two twins.
Right? Yeah, they're Jabba's cousins, but they're siblings. But I was wondering if they were conjoined.
Oh. It did sort of look like it, yeah.
I think they were just.
I didn't think that at all, but now I want to see that them conjoined
apart or together.
Yes, well, no, together.
They seem, and no matter what, they seem very close for siblings.
Yeah,
yeah.
But that's part of Hutt culture.
Hutt culture
could be.
Yeah,
I liked the drum when they arrived because it seemed like mm-hmm. something out of an old spaghetti western.
Yeah. And so counter to what Boba Fett's been saying, right? Like, I walk on my own 2 feet.
Yeah.
I don't need a drum announcing my presence. Yeah.
Yeah. Or like, yeah, there's been a lot of talk about, why aren't you on your platform? Where's your litter? Everyone keeps saying that. And so when they came, I thought, oh, people are going to respect them more because this is what they all expect to see of a crime lord, you know? But who knows? But I just one last thing on them is I love it. He was like, one of the Hutts was like wiping his face with a little rat and it was
sweat.
Biting his hand.
And then he throws it away. I thought he was going to eat it like everybody.
Yeah.
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 But they say they'll deal with him later and sleep lightly. So we'll see what happens.
Yes.
Yeah. It would have been fun to see him eat it. We, Jason and I have a friend that does a very good Jabba impression. I know we're listening and I wish you could see it, but it's pretty awesome.
Film him doing that and put it up on the Facebook
and post
page.
It. So funny, he goes,
yeah, I would love to see that.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. I was looking back when you, it was, or maybe it was on, Ash versus Evil Dead. It's our friend Spencer. He's podcasted with us before. Anyway, two more things. The like hallucinogenic lizard. I just think it's really awesome that it's reusable. That's so
that it jumps out and jumps right back in. You know, one thing that kind of implies that the sand people have some sort of nasal cavity.
That's
kind of interesting.
How do they get? Yeah, they're going to have to lift their mask up to use that. I think they use like donkey sounds to for their voices.
So, I should get my son in here. He does a pretty good impression.
Oh, that would be awesome. I don't think they're humans under there. I think there's some alien species.
Some alien. I mean, again, if the planet was water, maybe there's some weirdly aquatic.
Fishy. I just hope they have bigger nostrils if they're sending lizards up there all the time, because that did not look comfortable for human like Boba Fett.
Yeah. Yeah, and in the age of COVID testing, it's like,
Gosh. Oh,
I know.
And last
barely
thing,
handle that.
You know, I mean, with Baby Yoda on The Mandalorian, I'm like, God, what a great freaking character. But also, now, like, how are they going to do The Mandalorian without Baby Yoda, if they even are? It feels like the golden handcuffs, you know? Like, this is such a great character, but you want to be able to have stories without needing this character. And so I think now that we're two episodes into Boba Fett, this is a good way to prime people for it, because it's awesome to see some Star Wars TV not carried by Baby Yoda, even though I really like him. So maybe if he isn't there now for at least the first part of Mandalorian season 3, it won't feel like such a conspicuous absence, because we're getting used to it a little bit here. I don't know.
Well, maybe that's their goal.
That makes sense.
Easing us in, right? That'll work for some people. I don't think it'll work for my daughter.
I don't even know if it'll work for me, to be honest. Like, I want it back.
There's a certain group of fans that are just going to be like, no Baby Yoda? Forget it. Not watching.
So they're not watching Boba Fett?
You know what? They watched the first one, but the second one's been out for 2 days now, and they're
not asking for it.
They're not asking for it, no. Yeah. I don't know.
Yep, it'll be interesting, like, because I think the higher ups were like, okay, go ahead, Jon Favreau, try this Star Wars series. And Mandalorian was such a huge hit that they're like, okay, you can do 5 more series, guys. And then what if it just turns out that everyone likes Baby Yoda and that's it?
Yeah, they hit the, what did you call it? The golden handcuffs? They hit it off the top.
Yep. Right. I mean, I think this Boba Fett is pretty great so far. So.
Well, sure.
Hopefully people will appreciate the non-Baby Yoda Star Wars shows too.
Yeah, my kids are liking it. Most of the time I watch it and then they watch it. It's not like they ask, but they're usually right there. And they both seem to enjoy it.
Nico, I think, liked parts of this one, but he was also a little bored with parts of it.
Yeah, I could see that.
But we'll see. All right, that is it for that part. We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. It is time for news about the Book of Boba Fett, and I have a couple of items this week. Now, the first one is a bit of a correction and a bit of a follow-up on something I mentioned that last time, and that is the whole Patton Oswalt thing of predicting the way Boba Fett escapes from the Sarlacc pit. I looked into that a little bit more, and it turns out that, it was Patton Oswalt, and he was speaking about it, but it turns out it was from an episode of Parks and Recreation, the TV show. So back on season 5, episode 9 of that show, Patton Oswalt was playing a character called Garth Blunden, and he delivers this description about how Boba Fett escapes. And it turns out it was exactly what was depicted on the show. Whether the show knew about that and took it, I don't really know, but it's kind of a fun little piece of trivia. But the most amazing thing is that apparently the scene on Parks and Rec where he does this was mostly ad-libbed. Patton Oswalt said, you know, about it, he said there was nothing in the script. It was all it was Garth starts to begin to filibuster. And they told me, just do whatever you want. They didn't yell cut, so I didn't want to be unprofessional and stop. So the panic kind of locked in, and I guess my response was to dump every bit of Star Wars and pop culture trivia I have in my brain. And he came up with this Boba Fett getting out of the Sarlacc pit thing. So pretty impressive, I think,
even though
it's kind of a weird little coincidental thing or something like that. But it's out there if you want to go watch it. It's sort of entertaining.
I'm curious.
Yeah, so go check it out.
That's one show I haven't got around to, but I think I'm going to really like it.
Yeah, I've seen a good chunk of it. I haven't seen all of it, but my wife was a big fan and watched it. And so I caught a lot of it just because I'm in the room fairly often, right?
Right.
Big fan. I've watched the whole series. Very good.
Ah, cool.
I mean, I super Office fan. And,
yeah,
and that was
me too.
An easy transition.
Yeah, pretty similar, right?
I heard it starts getting really good after season one.
Yeah.
Sometimes shows take a little while to find their footing, right?
To find their footing, yep.
All right. The other news item I have this week is a Rolling Stone interview with Tamura Morrison and Ming-Na Wen. And it's a pretty good interview. But what I liked most about it was how we sort of get a feeling for their different personalities in real life a little bit. It's things like being asked about, you know, the two of them. Tamura Morrison is 60 and she's 58, and they're playing these characters who are strong and badass and not typical action heroes for folks that age. And, you know, Ming-Na Wen answers by talking about the training and working their butts off and all the things they have to do to, you know, meet the physical requirements of these characters. And she goes on about the responsibility they feel to Star Wars fans and to Favreau and to everybody else involved to make a really good show. And, you know, that's great. And then Morrison pipes in with, you know how they look at some fruit or some food at the supermarket and it's got a use-by date on it? Well, that was my career. So thank Christ somebody had a meeting and said, well, Boba's got to look like Django. He's a clone son. You know? So he just sort of takes a much lighter-hearted approach to it. Yeah, he's grandfathered in, exactly. He also makes a good joke about how his career was going great, and then The Rock came around and started taking all his roles. Oh. He's kind of similar looking. So,
yeah. I've always heard, oh yeah, Tamura Morrison's great, and I'm like, okay, I don't know, but I'm loving him in this.
Loving him, yeah.
Me too. Good. Me too. Yeah.
He's intense. He makes just crazy facial expressions when he's fighting people. You know, he's great. So that's in Rolling Stone, and it's an interview with the two of them. So I suggest you go check that out. It's a good read. And that is all for the news this week.
Sweet. I actually have one thing I wanted to mention.
Nice.
We started covering Yellow Jackets on this feed. Maybe you've heard if you're hearing my voice now. If you haven't watched that, I highly recommend it. I probably have been saying that way too much, but I'm just so excited about the series. Anyway, there's a character on there, Natalie. A young version of her is played by this actress, Sophie Thatcher. The older version is played by Juliette Lewis, by the way. But Sophie Thatcher apparently will be on Boba Fett for an episode at least. Mm-hmm. I saw her in upcoming episode, just a still photo of her in her full Star Wars garb. So I thought that might be kind of interesting to some of you guys.
Cool. I got to watch that Yellow Jackets show. I've been saying it over and over.
Very
again.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Check out at least the first episode. You'll know right away if you are going to be interested. It's very Lost-like.
Well, I love The Lost. I just completed a full rewatch of Lost.
So oh, wow.
Wow.
I'm ready.
Wow.
I got to do that at some point.
Yep.
All right. Let's get into some listener feedback. Eric?
Okay. Let's see. Alicia Stout says, incredible. So much to unpack here. This show is exceeding my expectations. I mean, who knew Tusken Raiders were cool? By the way, I find it hilarious that their warning cry is a bray of a donkey. So yeah, I guess you're right.
Oh, I think this is where I got that from.
Yeah. That train. Wow. Where is it coming from? Where exactly is it or was it going? Oh, I don't know. And who cares? It was badass. I'm digging this storybook. And hello, Gladiator Wookiee. Oh, hell to the yes.
So wait a minute, Alicia, did you like it or not?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Not so sure there.
I love that. She likes it so much.
Yeah,
it's great.
Absolutely.
Barry Evitz writes, amazing episode. Between this show and The Mandalorian, I am gaining a whole new understanding of the Tusken Raiders. The action was great. The story was interesting. And that massive Wookiee. Whoa. Good stuff.
Tina Carreri says that Tusken Raider ceremony was all like gobble, 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 gobble. Seriously, though, I love seeing more about them and their traditions. There's so much more than we've ever seen before, and I loved it.
Yeah, totally agree.
Penny Lennox, she writes, really adds a new dimension to the phrase lizard brain.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, Gail Cleary. I loved it. They are really earning Boba's character development. We can buy that he is more than just a bounty hunter now. I enjoyed the deeper story of the Tusken Raiders. It's nice to see them being treated as people and showing why they are so violent and horrible to outsiders. I am all in to see where this is going and what drives Boba to take over as Daimo.
Lisa Edmondson Walker says, I think I enjoyed the Boba flashback the most this time. At one point, I realized I was rooting for a species I never expected to cheer on.
Sherry Morford, I thought this week's episode was all right. I did like getting more insight in the Tusken Raiders and seeing more of their culture, but I didn't feel like there was much plot movement. However, seeing more of Jabba's family with the twins was interesting, and that Wookiee working them was freaking badass and scary looking. I'll keep watching because I love Star Wars, but I'm just not sure where this is going or if I really care that much.
Well, Sherry, it sounds like I was sort of on that page to start, but I think our conversation has made me like it more, so I hope it has helped her as well.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
Yeah. All right, Ben Beck writes, where else could we have gotten an episode that was part Star Wars, part gangster, part heist, part Western, and part Mad Max? Seriously, this was one of the best things I have seen come out of the Star Wars universe short of the original trilogy. Only Favreau and Filoni could take elements of Star Wars canon that we have always looked at as villainous or antagonistic and twist them to give them elements of humanity to make us feel for them and even root for them, as shown not only by Boba Fett early on in The Mandalorian, but now with the Tusken Raiders in this episode of The Book of Boba Fett. I can't wait to see what else this series gives us in the remaining episodes.
That's great, Ben.
Yeah,
it's interesting because I thought with The Mandalorian, maybe more with The Mandalorian, it harkened back to the old days of adventure TV shows, like something like Knight Rider or whatever, where each episode is its own story, you know, and there is an overreaching arc, but they're really each episode, like he has to save a village or, you know, whatever is going on in that episode. Mm-hmm. But it's this. I guess, this is a little bit like that, but anyway, the whole point of me bringing this up is they also modernize it by, like, I love when shows show a different perspective on a character that was seen
something
as a villain
that you already
before.
Know.
Yeah.
It's definitely less of sort of one-off episodes, the Boba Fett show is. I mean, it maybe because it's less episodes, I don't know, and it's more of a mini series almost.
Book. It's like a book.
It's like a book. Go figure.
Yeah. Of Boba Fett.
It's my turn, right?
Yes.
Dabalino Bob Griffey says, love the badass Wookiee. The Hutt twins arriving and departing is now the constant rewatch part. Anyone else notice the skinny female Wookiee in the slave Leia costume right before the Hutts arrive? Ew, I didn't notice that.
Me either. No.
Yeah, there were a couple of Jawas that had her on a chain.
Wow, oh, really? Go back and check that out. Yeah.
Definitely going to look for that.
I don't know if it was a Wookiee, though, but it was definitely a weird creature.
In a slave Leia costume. So I suppose the plan for the remaining episodes is to assassinate the twins with the permission of the families. I'm good with that. The Hutts arriving and departing, plus Boba in full armor kicking some stormtrooper butt, is world beyond anything the sequel trilogy cooked up. I mean, it could be instead of killing them, maybe he'll gain their respect. I don't know. I guess we'll see.
He needs to blow some people up.
I feel like there's going to be some killing for sure.
Yeah.
Okay, Michael Darwin, raise your hand if you expected one of the best things in all of Star Wars to be a number by Boba Fett and the Tusken Dancers. Seriously, that was good. And I'm enjoying the show. Not sure where they're going with Boba, and I am hoping he doesn't lean too hard into being a hero. What with the crime lord thing, there's a chance he remains a villain or at least morally ambiguous. I am sorry I didn't get to comment on last week's, as I had a scratched cornea. Ooh. And it kind of laid me up for a few days. Anyway, after listening to your last episode, I was thinking it was possible the Sand Child was taking Boba and the Rodian to the moisture farm to trade them for water. When he saw the gang, he retreated, even though they had left, possibly fearing their return.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting take.
Oh, good and theory. By the way, I think the bikers, the Nikto bikers, are the same gang that was terrorizing the...
That was terrorizing.
Yeah, the moisture farm.
Okay. Yeah, you know what? The speeder bikes had that symbol on them that they spray painted on the side of the wall. So it definitely was related in some way. But I like that theory about they were going there to get water and then they chickened out. So he made them dig for water instead. Yeah. Makes sense. All right. We have an email here from Tiffany Wunschy. Apologies, Tiffany. When you were talking about Boba Fett being born out of the womb of the Sarlacc pit, I remembered something I learned in Greek mythology. My college professor was a Star Wars nerd, and he said that many things in the movies were based on Greek myths. The Sarlacc pit is based on a monster that translates to... the toothed vagina. Men could enter, but could not escape because of the teeth without being castrated. It makes sense that Boba couldn't escape through the opening. I think I enjoyed listening to the three of you talk about the episode more than the episode itself. I always love to hear your thoughts and ideas that I hadn't considered. Keep up the good work. Please tell the Wheel of Time group that I'm impatiently waiting for episode 8.
They finally put that up.
Okay, good.
There you go.
That sounds like the scariest creature from Greek myths that I've ever heard of.
I think it might. Yep. And not something I want to encounter.
Ever encounter. And we got a couple of calls. Oh, thanks for writing in, everybody, by the way. That was great. A couple of calls. Here's Megan.
Hi, guys. This is Megan Lehman with a little bit of feedback for the second episode of The Book of Boba Fett. First of all, the hut scene, I just loved everything about that. When they came in carrying that litter, it was absolutely hysterical. And I wondered if they were conjoined twins, although I guess if one's male and one's female, they can't be. I'm not sure how that works. Where one hut stopped and the other one ended was not clear. And I just died with the female hut with her little fan, like the juxtaposition of this dainty little fan, you know, thinking back to like Victorian women like swooning in the salon and waving their little oriental fans. And it was giant pus bag meat creature. Blech. And my second point is the indigenous themes and the Tusken Raiders versus the train. I thought all of those scenes were really interesting. I like that they looked at them as people and kind of got past, they're kind of getting past that, you know, comic jokey aspect of them. And it's all gray, right? So it's not like they're some peaceful society. We saw how they treated the prisoners absolutely horribly. These people on a train aren't much better. They're just randomly shooting at people that they don't even know anything about. So it's shades of gray. And really this is about trying to evolve into learning how to live together, right? Through differences, which is what basically our whole world is still struggling with. But I really liked how Boba Fett talked to them to try to defuse the situation and kind of find a way for them to work something out that was respectful of the ancestral lands of the Tusken Raiders, which I realized that they were trying to defend, and they're probably like displaced people and nomadic people, and they have a traumatic history. But then, you know, the people on the train, they just want to make money. So if they realize, oh, okay, well, we can operate in these territories without having this constant threat of violence, it's better for everybody, obviously. So wrapping up my comments anyway, I think that this episode could have been called Dances with Tusken Raiders. Those are my thoughts. I can't wait to hear what you have to say. The show's getting better and better. Bye.
So, I mean, he had pus-filled meat creatures. I like that.
Yeah, I didn't notice the fan either, but now I totally got to go back and rewatch that hut scene. And then one more call. It's, I presume, Alive Steve from Steve Rat.
Ooh, Housepod Casca, this is Steve, and this is Book of Boba Fett, Chapter 2.
I think these guys with the red shields, I think this was the mayor's quote-unquote delegation.
Oh, there it is. We finally get to see the trapdoor used, and now the Rancor. Maybe.
I didn't think they'd have two Rancors, you know. Luke killed the first one. But there it is. These guys were sent by the mayor. I guess technically Jabba was his employer for a while, so it's a true statement from the mayor that you're sitting on the throne of your employer. So maybe the mayor didn't send the guy. Oh, that's a big Wookiee. And that litter is bowing quite a lot. Who would they have to get permission from? Is there somebody who rules over the huts? This train crossing the desert that just attacked the Tuskens. Oh, if their anatomy is the same as ours. Oh, his rifle break as a result of using it as a weapon because now he's just got the stick. He basically just beat these guys up and stole their bikes. He didn't teach them to go backwards. Whoa, that was a cool move. Boba just flipped the guy's stick up in the air. The guy rolled on the ground and caught it. Okay, I hope this train thing goes well for the Tuskens. Okay, that was another cool move, using the Bantha stick to pull the guy out of the train. Ha! The Troy just abandoned ship. Or I guess abandoned train. Like that. That's what spice looks like. Oh, did that lizard just go up his nose? So it's kind of his lizard brain? Oh, and then it goes back into the gourd? Do they reuse the same lizard? Ew. Oh, okay, I think I get it. That's why he was running around with just that training stick. He had to go through this vision quest kind of thing to join the tribe so they can make him, or have him make his own, whatever they call it, Gantha? Gaffin? Stick? Oh, look, kind of like a Jedi making his own lightsaber. So cool. Can't wait to hear you guys talk about this one and break it down and all the things that I'm sure I missed.
Boy, I love Steve's Live Steve's. Yeah. They're such a wild ride.
I know.
They're super cool.
A lot of times he just says like so many of the things that we've said on the podcast that I'm like, could we really shorten this down?
He does in a minute what we do in an hour and a 20.
All right, that is it. That's our show. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Thanks, you guys.
You bet.
If you guys want to write in or record a message, send it in. You can email us at talk@podcastica.com.
You can also check out the Facebook page at facebook.com/podcastica.
We're also on Twitter and Instagram at podcastica.
Please, as always, check out the other shows on the Podcastica Network at podcastica.com. And check out Chris's podcast at talkingdeadpodcast.com.
Thanks.
Because you need more of us.
Absolutely.
So many shows going on right now. It's cool. You guys watching Cobra Kai?
Cobra Kai. Yes. I just finished it.
Don't tell me what happened.
No spoilers.
Good season?
Absolutely.
Nice.
I can't wait. I'm
liking what I've seen so far. All right. That's our show.
Thanks for listening.
Yeah, it was a good one, but I'm actually, Eric thought you were a little off on your points this week.
Eat you thought.